I'm here with Terry Donahue, who I'm so happy to have on the podcast, because I had Damien on last time. You're part of his sort of poetry group. How did you join that? How did that all come to be?
Well, my first encounter with Damien after somebody told me to, friend him up on Facebook was actually, I got in an argument with one of his friends about politics.
His
friend started saying they were going to ambush me, and I showed up to one of the open mics, and that's where he remembered me from. Luckily for me, he thought it was a funny incident.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
and the Mondays and Tuesdays have been pretty. That's been my days to go out to the open mics. And I'm having a really good time there.
Yeah, that's great. You know, it's just so cool to like see how people evolve and everything. When did it first start for you that you got into the writing that you do now, the prose writing?
I guess that would have to have been around high school. I went to RBR and I was in like their creative writing program where they would actually bus kids in from other towns outside the district and have like two periods a day dedicated to writing. And I entered the Scholastic Art and Writing Contest or something, and I placed pretty well in that, but due to my in-school antics, I got suspended when I got the news that I had made it to, the final round of it. So,
oh, wow.
It was a bittersweet moment, but I realized, my life and behavior tends to be erratic enough that I'll never run out of material of,
right.
Funny things to talk about.
I don't know if you might probably know who he is. Do you know who George Watzke is? You ever heard of him?
That name doesn't ring a bell.
He's a very famous rapper, white rapper who came from the world of spoken poetry, and there's just a lot of stuff there that's familiar with him, and just I'm a huge fan of his. But with you, it's so cool just to hear, each time you come in, you don't really, with your style, it's very similar to the comedians. You feel like you fit in well with them. You feel like it's mixed pretty well, right? The poets and the comedians.
I don't want to alienate anyone. I feel like I get along equally well with each group.
Yeah.
Just because, whenever I'm writing an essay, I'm generally, applying one of however many formulas for humor writing.
Right.
But also I try and, try and be brief but descriptive, a poet would have to do.
It's just interesting that you sort of, your way, even though you're not a comedian, you know your way around a punchline. Were you always a funny person, do you feel like? You had a good sense of humor growing up?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. I was the class clown in middle school and, high school. And then people started telling me I should do stand-up, so I tried that in my early 20s and bombed terribly because, I would have trouble just thinking of something off the cuff. But then I actually started taking, humor theory classes, which is, about as geeky a sentence as anyone could ever possibly utter. But I went ahead and did that, read books on how to write punchlines and just kind of, I feel like I have to be writing about something, important, but I want to make it funny or else I'm not really enjoying myself when I'm writing.
Right. That makes sense. You kind of want to find that angle to it.
To keep doing something after you get somewhat good at it. It's only fun when you're fucking amateur.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like it's what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. I'm like, oh, this is torture.
Right.
Torture.
Yeah, it can be really tough.
Why couldn't I have been a fucking bricklayer or something?
Right, exactly. I'm I understand how you feel completely. I came from writing. Initially, I wanted to be a screenwriter, but my grammar is not as great as I would love it to be. And I'm not a structure person wise. I always used to, when I was a creative writer,
you're writing screenplays is the biggest pain in the ass part of it.
Yeah. When I was, my biggest problem as a writer, and this would annoy my teachers all the time, because I was not good with deadlines or anything. So I would scrap ideas immediately. I'd come up with new ideas and then scrap them immediately when they weren't working in 2 weeks.
That's a good instinct. It's called editing.
And then
you're gonna be able to kill your babies is my
Yeah. And that part made well into me doing stand-up because I was like, oh, I can just write another joke. Like, there's no flack in just writing a new joke each time.
Yeah, exactly.
Teachers get upset when you're like, I'm working on this. And then it's like, no, I scrapped that. I'm working on this next thing. Very indecisive, but, like, it's fit. And it's cool to figure out, like, what you, when you have that power. Like, to me, I feel like humor can be, is, like, great because it can be, like, a power, like, you press that button all the time and it can de-escalate situations. It can, you know, impress people a little bit. It's like the great, like, yeah, defense mechanism in a way.
I feel like it's like one of the greatest rushes when you use it to de-escalate specifically.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because it's like, I don't have, like, I'm not a powerful person, but in that aspect, it makes you feel that way.
Yeah, everybody's got something that's, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of police forces in the world could use your de-escalation tactics.
Right.
You need to hire funnier cops.
Hire funnier cops. Yep. Wouldn't be a good idea. You know, it's so funny. I don't get really political on this podcast. Sometimes I do. But, you know, it's interesting. Okay. It's always fun. Like, it's always not fun, but it's always nice to see, like, a fellow leftist, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like...
I mean, I kind of had you pegged for one, basically, the second I saw your act.
Oh, yeah.
So, we can steer the conversation away from this or back towards it if you want.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You might want
to... No, I mean, either way, it's fine. You know, I've had people on, you know, and we talk about it. But, you know, to me, it's just, it's interesting always to see because I always feel so complicated in the way to describe myself. Like,
yeah.
I'm very progressive, but I don't like beat people over the head with stuff. I'm just very much like... the way that I got into it was sort of through the like anti-Wall Street people, like that's who I sort of was.
Oh, like Occupy.
Like that's where I got into it. Like the Occupy sort of movement was where I kind of got started. So to me, it's like I always like when I describe it to like my parents who are like what I call my parents like sane Republicans. The way that I sort of say it, it's more like punk rock, like. Leftist, like leftism.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like no, like Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden. We don't like them. They're not hip enough for us. We like more of
this. What's not to like about an 83-year-old guy who grew up drinking out of his own water fountain?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, is he not progressive enough for you? Come on.
Yeah. So it's always nice just to hear someone on the common, like, ground level that you're not. Because you can feel pretty, like, you know, just demoralizing when you're around, like, just regular left-wing people, too, even. So it was interesting to have that, like, context. And that was cool to see with you and your recent stuff that you've been writing and everything. And just everything, like, with performing, since you were, like, pretty much very outgoing as a kid... Was there any type of stage fright that you had to overcome or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I still get nervous before I go on stage, but it's usually that, like, the nerves are kind of an energy. I mean, I've heard Jack Steiger talk about the same thing where he said he had his best sets when he was on the verge of a panic attack.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I've never been that nervous.
No, me neither.
Stage, but just a little... The little jitters are kind of natural, and
right.
By the time I start reading, you don't even notice.
Because I always feel like it's more of a... Like, my thing has never been shyness that I've performed for so long. I think the only time I really get, like, antsy is when it's important. Is when it's, like, when I feel like what I'm doing is important. Then I'm like, okay, I can't screw this up. That's when I get, like, antsy.
So what's that, like trying out new material?
Like if I have, like, an actual show with, like, them getting paid money on and stuff, then I get nervous. But if I'm doing, like, a regular open mic, like, it's so different because, like, now I'm kind of broken in to, like, where I don't really care what people think. I spent a lot of my time when I was younger being a person who very much did, like... care way too much about what people thought.
Yeah.
And as I get into my...
Some people never outgrow that, but most people do, and most people care what they think, what others think when they're younger. That's just what being young is part of.
Yeah. So, I don't know how old you are. I'm 29.
34.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I figured you were in early 30s. You know,
yeah.
It's just interesting to be in that time range, like, you know, and it's so great. great to be in that, you know, area now where there's, you know, so many people in the scene that are of similar age now. Because when I started, the comedians I was around, I was like 22 when I started, so everyone was 3 years older than me. It was it was like, okay. So now I'm sort of older, and it's like, I'm on that same wavelength with them, but it can be tough to start.
And like being the greenhorn around comics kind of sucks, because I've been, you know, when I first started just trying to be funny in actual settings where people are expecting you to be funny, the other comedians were, let's say, and it was a very much a football locker room.
Oh, like, yeah. Like,
not with, like, taping butt cheeks together or anything, but every joke was about me.
Oh, yeah. That can be really tough. I mean, to me, I've always sort of had that. That's one thing that I've sort of struggled with in the scene of where I'm at, is that I've always kind of had this mix of, like, sometimes it's pretty genuine that people really like me and I've sort of become this good figure and people like coming on the podcast and stuff. But a lot of it was having to deal with, like, am I this local, like, idiot that people think I am? Is it, like, am I this just this meme? And it's tough because I think anyone, no matter how silly or humorous you do anything as a writer and like a performer or an artist at all, you want to be respected for what you do. You want to feel what you do is at least good.
Oh yeah, true. But I mean, I don't mind, like, if I'm new on any particular scene, having to prove that to someone.
Right.
And I figure, you know, if I can't already laugh at myself right from the very beginning, I got no business laughing at anything.
Right. I think that's important too, you know, not to take yourself too seriously. That's always something to learn. Like, I noticed you're very similar to me in that, like, I like self-deprecating humor. That's always been sort of my...
Oh, yeah. I resort to that every so often as well.
Yeah, I love it. And it's so tough to do nowadays because people are, I feel like, generally are a lot nicer nowadays, just out of forcing to be. So I always felt like when I used to go on stage, I used to be like, it's not a hate crime to laugh at this certain stuff. It's like, I parse through because, you know, there's obviously, you probably learned this, is like, you have to write in a way that's appealing in some sort of way. You can't just make it doom and gloom. It has to be, there has to be an edge to it.
If I'm just writing doom and gloom with no punchlines, I might as well just be writing instruction manuals for VCRs or something.
Right.
Where's the fun in that? Anybody with a bachelor's in English can do that.
Right. Did you, like, do a lot of, like, school stuff for writing? Like, I know you mentioned a little bit, but...
Oh, I actually never finished college.
Oh, me too.
I kept, like, switching back and forth in Brookdale between English and history, so I could, you know, maybe someday write historical fiction, which I still do.
Oh, that's cool.
But, I never graduated because I figured even if I got the degree, I would still be working in a restaurant in my early 30s anyway.
What is, historical, can you explain that to me, like, historical fiction?
Oh, it's, you know, set in another place and time, sometimes involving real historical figures, and there's, like, a sliding scale, you know, you might use varying degrees of historical accuracy in some of the pieces of history, but, you know, it's not like a history textbook, you don't have to cite your sources or anything. And in some of them, I've actually inserted little historical details that seem innocuous, but I'm, like, leaving them there, like Easter eggs, I guess, for other people who have studied history in their free time.
I guess I think I saw you do that a little bit with, you have, like, this, I don't know if you still do it, like, this Shakespearean poem. I don't know if you don't
probably... No, I only read that once, actually. I was, like, one of those, sit down for 2 hours and bang out a writing exercise, and I it seemed amusing enough to me at the time when I was writing it to actually break it out on stage.
Right.
And it turned out really not to actually get that much of a reaction, but, you know, nobody heckled me, so...
Right.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained, as they
say. I guess I was just impressed by that and just seeing, like... Just your stage presence, how it's evolved too, because, like, I'm always self-conscious about mine, and just seeing you be able to go up there. I'm also very curious, you probably don't think about this a whole lot, but, like, the outfits that you wear, like, the different lapel stuff, like, what's that about? Like,
oh, Well, actually, sometimes I'll come by after work if I get out early enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like working in an Italian restaurant where we get nothing but the same five Frank Sinatra songs piped over the speakers
on
repeat for 9 months out of the year. And then the remaining 3 months, it's nothing but Christmas music.
Right.
So I have a bunch of pins of, like, punk bands that I like just to, you know, send up a flag to my customers to see if any of them like punk bands and let them know what set I'm repping. When I'm not in my work uniform, I've just been dressing all goofy like that for, you know, as long as I've been buying my own clothes.
Yeah, I always love when people have, like, a distinct outfit that they wear and everything. What are the type of punk bands that you like?
Well, my favorite is going to have to be The Clash.
I love The Clash.
The only band that matters. I also wear a bunch of t-shirts of, like, you know, it's something you don't have to think about. You don't have to put an outfit together if you're just like, all right, I'm going to put on a t-shirt of an album I like, and that'll
right.
get people to start conversations.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like when you go to a concert and you're looking around at all the other t-shirts everybody's wearing. Oh, good day again. And then you give each other a hand job in the mosh pit.
Right. Very funny. Yeah, it's just so cool to, like, just hear about how you started. Is your family, like, pretty supportive of everything that you've done?
Yeah, now that I'm not living in my parents' house anymore, they're like, yeah, you know, have fun in the real world. Do whatever you want. No, but I mean, you know, they encouraged me, you know, a great deal and probably thought I was going to go to college if I ever stopped misbehaving in high school long enough to graduate.
Mm.
And so for most of my early to mid-20s, I had just given up on that dream for no reason in particular and spent years not writing anything. And then once I turned 30, I remembered, oh, yeah, I'm going to die someday. So I actually started writing again, and that was, I guess, the beginning of the proverbial second life.
Yeah, that's cool that sort of gave you, that you at least had that entry into it, that, oh, I want to do this.
I know, well, having grown up in an orphanage would have been a way better story, but, you know,
right.
I am a fiction writer after all, but I figured I should actually just stick with what actually happened.
I mean, you mentioned it a little bit. I hope it's okay that I ask. What were you getting in trouble in school for?
Oh, I found school boring, so I just would, like, misbehave to get reactions out of my friends, and that, you know, that was the only time they ever really wanted me around, is to see how I would make the teacher's life hell next for their own amusement. But they, you know, they enjoyed laughing at me from afar. But so when I was a sophomore, I ran for student body president, and you were supposed to get your campaign posters approved by the front office before you hung them up. But I just went and hung mine up without approval.
Oh, that's
for instance,
awesome.
I had one with a picture of a kitten with its arms in the air and a gun pointing at it and said, vote for Terry or I'll kill this kitten. And I felt so bad for the poor disciplinarian having to sit there and yell at me and rank me out and pretend it wasn't the funniest thing you'd ever seen a student do.
Right.
But it was all kinds of things. Like, I wasn't, like, getting in fist fights or bringing guns to school or selling drugs or anything, you know, really.
Right.
Anything that you couldn't buy your way out of if you had rich parents or something.
Right.
But
and I guess, were you a pretty good student academically that, like, teachers wouldn't, like, get too mad about? Because I can imagine being pretty smart.
I failed all of my math classes and got decent grades in the humanities, but
oh yeah,
that's, you know,
I was terrible at math too.
Like, it's high school, like, you gotta get good grades in everything if you wanna go to a real college,
right,
without having to spend a couple of years at a community college or a trade school.
Yeah,
but you know, it was a weird time in my life, and I should have behaved better and gone more on the academic straight and narrow, but I'm pretty happy with where I am now.
Right.
Know?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm never bored.
Of course, it doesn't seem like it.
I learned from an early age how to entertain myself.
Yeah, it seems like that. Like, you found, like, what you like to do and everything.
Oh, yeah. So, well, when I was in high school, I could have entertained myself in more productive ways, but, you know, I can't do anything about that now.
Right. So when were you performing in high school with anything?
Was I performing in high school? I don't remember. Yeah, I think, because I was in the creative writing program. We had a thing at the end of the year where all the creative writing students would read their own things, and I don't remember what I wrote and read on that stage. I just remember doing it, but I'm sure it was, very derivative of some kind of pop culture reference that I thought was really awesome as a teenager.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense, yeah. Like, getting into, like, the different types of writing, it's always, like, so cool to me. Like, I wish I could go back to it, but it's just, like, I was never good, like, grammatically as much as I wanted to be. So it's, like, I was always better, more creative.
You can, like, edit your own writing, or they have people to do that for you, even if you want.
Yeah.
But also, like, you got the, you're doing comedy now. Might as well focus on that without trying to complicate things.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting you talk about, like, starting out in comedy and, like, how hard... It is definitely a hard thing to really figure out, because I think it's so personal, you know, once you get into doing it. You know, I've seen people that are great that have just bombed one time that was really, really bad, and they just don't do it anymore. And it takes a lot of strength.
That's probably what happened with me, honestly.
It takes a lot of strength, you know, to keep getting up there. But at least you moved into something that you can do and that you feel like it didn't break you enough to be like, oh, I can't perform ever again.
Yeah.
And that's a strength.
I've been sailing into fiction for a long time, too, but I feel like I have more of a knack for that than for stand-up comedy, so it was easier for me to stick with.
Do you have any stuff that you're working on currently?
I'm in between pieces, but I've actually been in a real bad slump. I haven't finished a piece of long-term fiction in about a year and a half now.
Uh-huh.
And the last thing I wrote was, like, you know, not something I would normally write. I wasn't sure how it was going to come out, and I was very pleased with the end result. And I'm, like, 0-15 with Literary Journal. I submitted it everywhere I could find that would accept a piece of that length, and they have all soundly rejected it.
Oh, that's tough. You know, that's the one thing I learned through, like, poetry, what you guys have to deal with that. That must be, like, you know, just really tough to, like, put your stuff out there and just be like, is this anything?
Kind of demoralizing your time. But, like, I knew that rejection was going to be a part of this.
Right.
I just didn't know it was going to be the only part of it.
Right.
So I actually, submitted something I've been trying to get published for a long time to, like, press that Damian Rucci told me to check out. And I still haven't heard back from them. Like, I thought they would just print out however many copies as long as I paid them.
Nah.
And I wanted to have a product to hawk for this. As, you know, shameless as that sounds. But also, I mean, they didn't even get back to me either, so.
No, it makes sense.
Yet, anyway.
I mean, it makes sense to try and, like, get anything, you know, when you're trying to put stuff together. I want to talk about, it's funny, you did that poem. I can't remember if I read it on Facebook or not. It looks familiar. The thing you did about your girlfriend and the Calvin and Hobbes reference.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was great.
I posted that on Facebook a couple of years ago, actually.
Oh, okay. Because maybe I saw it. I was like, I'm a huge Calvin and Hobbes fan. Like, I grew up on Calvin and Hobbes. And
greatest comic strip of all time, with the possible exception of The Far Side.
Oh, yeah. I just remember when I was, like, 10, my dad had, like, one of them, and I was like, what is this? And then I got into, like, all of it.
I drank Calvin and Hobbes when I was that age. Like, just a little bit older than Calvin. I can still remember when it was, like, 6.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, even to look back at it now, there's so much great, like... It's just so great. I loved the character and everything they did with it. And it's really cool to, like, be in that time space of, like, they didn't really make anything of it. Like, I know Bill Waterson wasn't great about, like, you know, marketing it. Like, he didn't want to he didn't want to make anything. Like, he didn't want merch. He didn't want to make anything, like, any movies or anything. And it's like, it's, like, funny to, like, imagine that. It's, like, in the world of, like, it's kind of cool, like, in the world where, like, currently they're rebooting everything and making stuff out of all different types of pop culture.
You think there would be, like, a Hobbes plush toy or, like, some Calvin breakfast cereal somewhere, but
yeah.
No, he stuck to his guns.
Yeah. it's like, that's an interesting thing to me to have that mindset. But I just loved, you know, reading that. And, yeah, one of my other favorite comic books, I don't know if you ever heard comic strips, is one called Sits. I like that one.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Calvin and Hobbes was the only really comic strip I ever dealt in. Yeah. I knew I was supposed to be reading, my assigned summer reading lists, but I was more interested
in reading whatever for sure. I wanted to read. For sure. Yeah. Do you have any other, writing influences or anything that really sticks out?
Well, from the humor perspective, I always kind of admired David Foster Wallace as a humorist and an essayist, because he could write things that were, you know, very funny and very sad at the same time. I'm drawing a blank now. I had so many names lined up prepared to answer this question. Yukio Mishima, I thought, was just a beautiful writer. Really would put on a clinic of language, even though he was writing in his original Japanese. And I also admire the guy for being a man of action, because he, in 1970, stormed a Japanese government compound and demanded the government lay down its arms and surrender, and then he committed seppuku.
Oh, wow.
So that's pretty cool. I get a little squeamish at the sight of blood, so I'm just going to keep trying to write.
Right, exactly.
Cormac McCarthy has always been one of my favorite writers, but I have given up trying to emulate him just because of his command of the English language. Mm-hmm. But, he writes a lot of historical fiction as well, and he uses very vivid imagery, and the brutality of his writing really encapsulates how gruesome the human race used to be to each other, even though we very much still are. But
right,
I was enjoyed his historical fiction. I'll probably think of some more later on and just blur him out.
Right,
while you're in the middle of another question.
That's so cool, just like to figure out like how often are you performing usually? Do you have like a set like?
Times? No, just whenever I get a chance. I mean, Tuesdays are usually my day off from the restaurant, so I was actually planning on popping into Puff Puff Poems at the Scarlet Reserve Room.
I was curious if you were going to go tonight.
7 p.m. tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to try and check that out. Yeah. Are you a wee guy at all?
No, I used to be. In high school, every time I, did something else outlandish, I was usually stoned for it.
Oh, really?
I would do it before school, and then I had to quit for like 6 months one time. And now every time I take one hit, I get like panic attacks and like I'm turning into a werewolf. And like my parents get stoned now and I don't, which is a super, what am I supposed to do? Dad, are you on drugs? Are you huffing grass? You're grounded, young man.
Yeah, it is crazy how much
spiel they were giving me.
It's crazy how much it's changed.
Role reversal.
Yeah. I just remember like all the kids that used to like make fun of me were stoners. And I always wondered why. It was like, that is not supposed to be a relaxing drug. why are you so pissed off all the time?
Even like the real heady type stuff, sativa, that gives you like the total mind fuck. That used to be fun for me. And now it's just like, I could take one hit before I go to sleep and be up until I can hear the birds, thinking about my inexorable march toward the sweet release of the grave. That's what happens when I smoke weed now.
Yeah. To me, like, I could never do it traditionally. Like, one friend, like, did it for me because I would probably just burn myself. Like, I always say, like, I have this really shaky hand thing from my father's side. So I was like, whenever I talk about it, I'm like, I'd set myself on fire smoking weed every other way. So I did weed pens for a while. And then for, like, the past, 6 months, I've been doing edibles for the first time. Which is just...
those are, like, way more gentle and gradual.
And
like,
the only bad thing was...
lose track with that as well.
Yeah, the only bad thing with that was when I did edibles for the first time at Scarlet Reserve was like, I just shouldn't have done them there because I was just like, oh, this was way bad to do in public.
Oh yeah, there's like a ton of people in there. The room is all smoky.
Like I could never do that ever again.
Room, but that's how you get I would get head rushes or get a little lightheaded or something.
Oh yeah, it's like I always feel like I'm gonna get a contact high there when I don't get anything. Yeah.
That would be the place for it to happen.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Are you getting like a lot of traffic sounds right now? Is that a problem? For some reason,
no, I'm not hearing anything.
The neighborhood for this.
No, I'm not hearing anything bad. You're good.
Oh, all right.
You're all good. Yeah, this is really great. I don't want to get too personal, but is your girlfriend a writer?
No, she's a jazz musician.
Jazz musician, right. Right, you mentioned that.
She has a Con Barry, like a baritone saxophone, from like 1912. It's like a loner, but it's a really actually pretty rare instrument. But she plays baritone, tenor, and alto saxophone. And she basically just taught herself trumpet in like 6 months.
Oh, wow.
Which I tried to blow into the trumpet and I couldn't, before I even got a sound out of it, the back of my neck felt like I was about to slip a disc. Like, I've never used that muscle before. I didn't know I had a muscle there and I heard it trying to play a trumpet. It's fucking embarrassing.
Yeah, I tried to do trumpet in like fourth grade. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's Miles Davis is a superhuman.
I had like no incentive to do it once I started to do it. I was like, this is it. It was really anything.
The only thing I can think of that would make me want to pick up trumpet is like, oh, then I can pull off wearing sunglasses indoors at night.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But it must be good to be with someone who like is a performer also, so they sort of understand that inclination to go out
and get the whole starving artist kind of lifestyle, like where, you know, she doesn't mind that I'm a little bohemian, a little devil may care towards general adulthood norms.
Right.
She knows, she gets it. Like, we're both going to be working in the service industry until we manage to make something out of, you know, what we've each respectively been put on earth to do. Like, she's
right.
Supposed to be making music with her life, and I'm supposed to be writing, and just as long as we're trying, and that makes everything else we have to deal with worth it.
Yeah, it's cool to hear that attitude, you know, because it can be so tough when you're in the middle of it to be like, you know, is this something worth, you know, pursuing? Can be...
I feel like every artist has... You know, points where they ask themselves that question and they go through a period of existential dread. And, like, I'm not particularly successful at what I'm doing right now, but it, really the act of creating is holy in itself. Like, that's...
No, that's I understand completely.
You know, if I fucking suddenly blew up overnight, I would miss this, too. I would miss, you know, being on... Trying to talk myself up on podcasts.
Right. Well, I think
it's
the hardest...
really all part of the journey.
Yeah, for sure. Because you never know, like, I know so many people, like, it goes from, you know, a little bit of something, and, like, you know, you never know how something's going to happen. Like, to me, I like being in the grind sometimes, and I like being, you know, right? I mean, it's kind of fun when you talk about, like, being published. Like, our whole thing is, like, trying to work for comedy clubs is the toughest, because, like, it's really tough to break into that. And to me, I have my own, like, criticisms of that world, and I love the punk rock energy of just what we do at open mics and shows we do when we get big shows together. And
a merry band of misfits all in one place.
Yeah, and it's cool, you guys have that sort of thing, too. That was so cool. That must have been so cool for the Voices in the Garden thing. Like...
Yeah, like, this is... I mean, that's... what something can grow into, and it, you know, it can grow yet even from that into something even bigger and more nebulous.
Right.
It just folds so many other young aspiring artists in the warmth of its embrace, and I'm just really glad to see it happening.
Yeah, it's so cool.
It gives me hope.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is something in short supply nowadays for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, if you can keep doing, you know, what you love, it just encourages people to do it even more.
I was going to bring up Voices in the Garden. You beat me to it, damn it.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't sure you'd talk about it or not. But, yeah, I mean, that was cool to, like, see it just it develop around and see how... It felt, like, pretty natural, you know? It didn't seem like anyone was too afraid to be around. Like, because I would think that's a lot of pressure.
You know, was featured on that. It even could have imagined it happening, you know, 6 months beforehand. It just took off and and took on its own momentum. And I just love seeing them, everybody, you know, be a part of this. Like, we're building our own community. And
right. And it must have been...
That's how civilizations start.
Yeah. And to me, it seemed like they showcased it, like, you know, they did it properly in a way of, like, showing people's personalities correctly. Because I think that's the biggest thing that you would worry about with something like that is, like, am I portrayed in the light that I want to be portrayed? Like, that's very hard.
Yeah, yeah, they could do some, like, clever editing or, like, type of 60 minutes, they just got to make sure they don't keep a clock in the background to show you how badly they cooked the interview to make somebody look like a douchebag.
But yeah.
I like the, TBS is very trustworthy.
Yeah. They were great. So,
institution.
So you said you might come out. You're gonna come out tonight. Do you have anything like new planned or anything?
No. I've been slacking the past week or so. I've only spent about an hour in the past week, you know, writing or editing anything. But like every once in a while, I will step back if I have to, and just kind of dive into a book and try and read and get the creative juices flowing. And
right.
Or sometimes you have an idea and you're like, I should write about that now, but it's okay to let it, you know, sift and percolate in your head a little bit before you actually start spilling it out on the page. But, you know, I'm trying to keep pressure on myself, but an appropriate amount, because,
right.
You know, you put too much pressure on yourself, you'll get crushed.
Yeah, you never want to do that. You just want to have that, like, healthy amount of... I always go through periods of really bad writer's block, and it's just like, how am I going to do this? And my stuff is so weird. It's just like, you know, I'm so envious.
Don't force it. Just keep in mind that life is a long emergency.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's one of the things that's sort of been, like... When did you start, when did you start with, like, performing in general? Like, when you did comedy and stuff? Like, how old was that age?
Middle school. I was in musical theater. Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and I think my parents saw me doing musical theater in a rainbow blouse, and were like, "We better get this kid back to church." And so, you know, I stopped going to church and was like, "Yeah, fuck the priest. He's boring. I'd rather be the center of attention."
Are your parents
manifested in high school and just acting up in class, but. I'd say I found more productive outlets for that around my early 20s. You know, I did stand up a couple of times, gave up on that, went back to college and took writing classes. And so, I mean, if workshopping your writing in a classroom counts as performance, then I guess I would have to have started doing it in earnest around 23.
Yeah. Was your family very religious growing up?
No. They were Catholics, so, you know, it's just, we're Catholics. That's how religious they are. They say that. And, it wasn't like a totally repressive environment. You know, my mom got a sense of humor and everything, but I didn't. It was, you know, going to church was probably the least spiritual experience I've ever had, so.
Oh, yeah.
I just decided there was no more room for that in my life.
Oh, yeah. I mean.
At least we were raised like, Wahhabi Muslims with no pork and only wiping your ass with your left hand.
Right.
That would have been a far more rigorous religious upbringing that I would have cracked under the pressure, honestly.
Yeah. We were very much like the same thing with Judaism. Like, it wasn't really that pushed on us a whole lot. Like, I just had my bar mitzvah, like, you know, that little, like, period, but... Now we're just sort of out of it.
Judaism is like the only religion that kind of really passes for a philosophy. Like
it's very funny.
My parents would have placed a far higher premium on education and critical thought. With Catholicism, it's like, oh, that doesn't make sense, but just don't think about it.
Right. It's such a weird, like, it was just so, like, that's the first thing that you just notice, I guess, with just being able to talk in front of people, like I noticed with the rabbi, that's like a thing. It's like, oh, you know, it's kind of like performance in a way. That's admirable.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you're like at first.
And like, a bar mitzvah and a confirmation happen are roughly the same age.
Yeah.
So you're kind of really coming in here, not that you're an adult or as smart as you're ever going to be, but like, that's when you're first starting to figure out who you are, and which is probably not coincidentally when most people stop going to their respective religious institutions.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, right after that.
You just,
I don't think,
you just sort of
find it. I think that's definitely, there's a pattern there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I know you mentioned doing musical theater. Did you do a lot of plays and stuff?
I can only think of a couple offhand. You know, it's not like something I really wanted to pursue actively. It was just an extracurricular. You know, like I played football and stuff, Pop Warner football and stuff too. So it was just kind of bouncing around from interest to interest.
Wow. Well, at least football must have been good for, like, energy and, like, being able to get some aggression out, too. Like.
Yeah, well, so does having ADHD. Energy has never been something in short supply for me. It's, if anything, it's, you know, knowing how to relax.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine that's how that would work, having to deal with that, you know. Just be like
I'm getting on in years, and I'm still having trouble sitting still for an extended period of time.
Right. Well, I do want to thank you so much for doing this and being on. I know you were kind of like, I don't know, not hesitant, but just like, you know, it being, you know, too long or anything, and I don't want to take too much of your time.
If any, I feel like I owe you extra material because I delayed our podcast for a few days because
I didn't understand
scheduling.
No, it's totally fine.
I'm not confident in my ability to be interesting for more than
an hour. I messed up because I've been getting like this flash of like, you know, the thing that's so interesting with this is I never really expected it to turn out the way that it has. I'm very happy. Because the reason I only started this podcast was to fix my attitude, because I have a terrible attitude of being in the New Jersey scene of comedy. Because, you know, you always have, I think anyone has dreams of grandeur when they start, and then you're like, oh, I'm going to be here. And you can either be...
Reality sets in, like, oh, I got to work a little harder if I want the grandeur.
And, you know, for me, it's like, I've just always wanted to fix my attitude, and the one way of doing that was showcasing people who also... haven't been, you know, showcased too much, because that's a tough thing.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that's a sacred charge, man. That's you're doing a good thing, and you are working hard, and I'm glad to see things starting to you know, culminate for you.
Yeah, it's really, really been cool. So it's, you know, and I love just getting, you know, not just having comedians on, having just anyone on that I want that I find interesting, because I just find like. I just have these, like, small interest from just, like, that person perks my interest. I need to have them on immediately. And I'm just glad that we were able to do it, because I know that it can take, like...
Yeah, me too. I was, you know, I was talking about the pre-performance jitters. I actually got those before this, too.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine.
I just smack a nicotine patch onto my forehead just to calm my nerves a little bit.
Right. Yeah, it can be, you know, it can be, you know, tough to figure out, like, what you're going to... Dude, like, you were really good. You did really good for this. And I'm actually...
Oh, thanks, man.
I'm just trying to be a better interviewer, because I'm always trying to figure out new questions to ask.
Oh, no, man. That was roughly what I expected it to be. Like, you didn't have to pull out any weird... fuck, marry, kills or anything like that.
I never try to be too personal. Like, if it goes down that route, it goes down that route, and I'm not afraid, but it's like... To me, I'm just I want to keep people, you know, interested and, you know, also make the person feel comfortable, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
So besides tonight, do you have any other, like, how many times a week are you usually going out to perform?
Once usually? It's a rare week that I go out every single week.
Right. I can imagine with your job and stuff.
So I figured tonight's probably my shot. Yeah. I'm gonna do it tonight just to keep the gears oiled.
Right. Are you able to ever, like, with your job, like, I imagine it's pretty communal. Like, do people...
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's restaurant, so the scheduling is very flexible. Hey, can you work my... Tuesday, and then they'll be like, yeah, can you work my Sunday? Just make sure it's a repast, so don't make any jokes about death or widow being single.
Right.
Oh, yeah, deal. So it's usually pretty good to, like, move stuff around if you want to go on a... It's like, you know, you're getting featured or something.
Right.
It can be done.
Yeah. That's so cool. Like, Are you on anything that Damien's doing? Anything?
Why does Damien have a podcast?
Oh, I don't know if you have like any shows coming up that you were doing or anything.
Oh, no, I kind of take them as, you know, as they come. Actually, I featured at Nip and Tuck, was it last week or 2 weeks
Yeah,
ago?
I think so. Yeah. That was...
Yeah, it was 2 weeks, yeah. And I was afraid that, like, I was so afraid of going over my time that I just read too fast and barreled through all the punchlines.
Yeah, that's a tough thing. With figuring out timing is the hardest. Because it's, once you, I don't know if you felt this way, once you start, it feels like time goes by slow. And then once you get comfortable on stage, you want it to, it goes by way too fast. And it's like,
yeah, exactly.
It's like, no, I want more of this. I'll always like.
So that's one of the tougher things. Actually, at the Nip and Tuck, probably the toughest thing are like when the bad biker gangs come in and start making fun of us poetry dweebs.
Oh, yeah.
Interrupting and heckling our show. There's been problems with that in the past.
Yeah, it can be really tough. Like, I feel like with the one thing that I love is the unity between the comedians and the poets. But I know there was a little bit of like tension with that too, because I think there was a lot of people. They weren't excluded, but like it became sort of like known that like Damien didn't really like a lot of people who were too dramatic in their stuff.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Really likes that.
Like, he was cool with, you know, he's cool with, like, emotional stuff, but
he's cool with people expressing themselves, but, like, if you're gonna make a scene and make people cringe,
yeah,
then that's weird.
Yeah.
It's entertaining in hindsight, but when it's happening,
yeah,
you're just like, this is making me very uncomfortable, and I'm gonna go to the bathroom.
And it can be tough to, you know, follow that and be like, okay, now I'm supposed to go up.
And it's probably easier for a comedian to follow it because they can just make a de-escalation joke.
Yeah, I try to, and then I'm like, oh, that's too mean. Or that's like, it comes off as a bad thing.
Some comedians do have a reputation for that.
Yeah.
It's like you, Chevy Chase.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, that's a real funny example of a guy. I'm not a big fan of his, but Joe Rogan has a great, theory on why Chevy Chase is such an asshole, is because he was very physical in his comedy, so, like, he's probably just hurt all the time now from all the stunts he did, because he didn't really have stuntmen, he just threw himself down all the time, his back and, like, neck is probably killing him.
It's like a game of, like, you know, which hurts worse right now, my knee or my hip.
Right. Like,
which stunt did I get this injury from? I can't remember.
Right.
Yeah, that would probably make me pretty pissed off, too.
Yeah.
Sounds like something he brought on himself.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, and then it's like me thinking, like, well, we all suffer for what we do in some sort of way.
Yeah.
It's been really cool to have you on, and, you know, if you ever have, like, anything come out or that you want to, you know, talk about, definitely hit me up and I can have you on again.
Oh, shit, that's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
I was flattered to be asked, actually. I was taken aback. In a good way, obviously.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's so rare that anybody actually asks me for my opinion on anything. Usually I have to give it unsolicited.
Right. It's just like...
Which I'm always more than happy to do.
Right. It's just like, I know very little about your world of, like, prose poetry and, like, poetry in general. So I was just like, if I can have someone on who can sort of explain it to me in a way that's casual, I was like, that's great. So you really did a good job of what I wanted, because I know that we were kind of, like, figuring out if we would be able to do this. So
awesome.
Thank you. Do you have any social media stuff that you like to promote or anything?
Not at the moment. I was hoping I would have that one from the smaller press, but I should have followed up with them earlier. But I'm looking to, in the future, go into self-publishing, just because no one else will really touch my short stories.
Right.
They're at a difficult length. They're usually like 20 single-spaced pages, which people are usually looking for something either under 2,000 words or a full fucking novel.
Oh, right.
And so it's like right in a strange cavity of length that it's, you know, they tend to be, you can't really sit down and read them in one sitting. It's more of like a two or three sitting kind of thing.
All right. Well,
which means I'm long-winded. It sounds like I'm calling myself long-winded.
No, it's okay. I just wanted to ask for the last thing. Like, do you have any social media that you want me to, like, throw it or anything?
I'm on Facebook at Terry Donahue, but it's not like a page. It's just me, just my personal account.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the cool thing is, like, I noticed the one thing that was cool is you friended my friend Rob 80, and...
Oh, yeah, well, I friended him because I liked the outfit he was wearing in his profile picture. Yeah. Like a Hawaiian shirt and a sombrero and a tie.
I'm hoping he comes...
I gotta know what this guy is about.
I'm hoping he comes back.
The most outlandish costume. It looks so cool.
Oh, yeah. He does a lot of, like, sketch comedy stuff on YouTube and, like, TikTok, and he's really good, but he used to do stand-up, and, like, it was tough for him because he just wanted to do it, like, and kind of be, like, a fictional character type of thing, and he didn't realize how social it was, but he's hoping to get back into it, and but it was just cool to see that, like, that comment of, like, oh, those two people, like, that makes sense that they'd be friends. It makes a lot of sense. So that's kind of the cool thing, like, that's one of the powers of, like, that social media has been for this podcast is, like, a lot of what I do is I'll find a comedian. I listen to a lot of comedy on Spotify because you can just find albums. And I'll find someone who has, like, an album in, like, Idaho who's, like, the top comedian in Idaho. And then I'll friend them on Facebook and see that I have, like, 15 mutual comedian friends with them. And be like,
oh, yeah.
You know.
You're watching the community grow. You're watching all these connections be made, like, the synapses in a brain forming and... It's like, oh, I was always hoping these two guys would link up. I want to see what the banter between them would be like.
Yeah, so that's so cool. So, yeah, that's about it. But thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'll see you later tonight.
It was way less nerve-wracking than I thought it was going
to
be.
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah. I don't like to put any type of, you know, intense pressure on anyone to be anything. You know, it's
I'm
just
plenty good at that myself.
I'm the same way. It's just a combination of, you know, I always try and figure out, like, am I going to make it more of an interview or more of a conversation? And I try and keep it equal in both so that it's not, you know, just hammering questions away at someone and being like, you know, because that can be tough for people. So it's just like, yeah. But thank you so much. I'll see you later tonight.
All right, hopefully. Man. I'll see you then.
All right. Bye.
Have a good one, Dwight.
All right, that was Terry Donahue. That was awesome.